Welcome to Washington Today for Friday, April 29th, 2022. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some of today's headlines. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russia of trying to humiliate the United Nations. Why? He said that Russian forces launched missile attacks on Kyiv as the head of the United Nations visited the city. And U.S.-funded broadcaster Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, said one of its journalists was killed in those missile attacks. A former U.S. Marine was reportedly killed fighting alongside Ukrainian forces in the war with Russia. A State Department spokesperson could not confirm the report due to, quote, privacy considerations. Rebecca Cabrera told CNN that her 22-year-old son, Willie Joseph Cancel, was killed Monday while working for a military contracting company that sent him to Ukraine. Cabrera told CNN that her son's body has not been found. A Colorado prison inmate has tested positive for bird flu. This is the first recent confirmed case of a human infected with the disease that has killed millions of chickens and turkeys. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday evening that the man who tested positive had been in a pre-release program and was helping to remove chickens from an infected farm. He has since recovered, and federal officials say they see little threat to the general public. We begin now in the U.S. Department of Defense at the Pentagon with Press Secretary John Kirby giving an update on how the U.S. is helping Ukraine fight Russian forces.
Today I can announce that the United States has commenced training with the Ukrainian Armed Forces on key systems at U.S. military installations in Germany. Now, these efforts build on the initial artillery training that Ukraine's forces already have received elsewhere, and also includes training on the radar systems and armored vehicles that have been recently announced as part of security assistance packages. U.S. Army Europe and Africa Command will organize this training in coordination with the government of the Federal Republic of Germany, and we're grateful, of course, for Germany's continued support. As you recall, in February, out of an abundance of caution, the Secretary ordered the temporary repositioning of about 160 members of the Florida National Guard who are then supporting the joint multinational training group Ukraine. And we said at the time that this decision was not the end of our relationship with Ukraine, of course, and that we would explore new ways to work together in the future. The recent reunion now of these Florida National Guard members with their Ukrainian colleagues, we are told, was an emotional meeting, given the strong bonds that were formed as they were living and working together before temporarily parting ways in February. This new training effort in Germany and at other locations in Europe is in direct support of recent U.S. security assistance packages that are designed to help Ukraine win their battles today and build strength for tomorrow.
Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby. During her weekly briefing, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also updated reporters on aid money to Ukraine, as well as other topics, including COVID-19 relief.
On the Ukraine bill here, obviously there's talk about maybe putting the COVID money in. You say there hasn't been a decision made about...
Well, I'm all for that. I think it's very important. We have emergencies here. We need to have the COVID money, and we need time is of the essence because... We need the Ukraine money. We need the COVID money. So I would hope that we can do that. This is called legislation, and we'll have to come to terms on how we do that.
But if they have to drop the price tag, the president reiterated the call for $22.5 billion.
Yeah.
Yet there was a deal between Senator Romney and Senator Schumer, a lower figure. Do you see that figure coming back up to $22.5?
Well, I would hope it would come up to $22.5. But as you described, this is a Senate negotiation. And we'll see what they come up with because it'll be what can pass the Senate. And it would be paid for.
And is Title 42, if it's put into that, or there's a vote on that?
Well, that's a different story. Let's see what the Senate... My understanding is that the Senate is working on... I don't know this for sure. But my understanding is that the Senate is working on other language that serves the purpose at the border, but is not a Title 42.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi briefing reporters earlier. Will the U.S. again be the arsenal of democracy? That was the question posed by the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center and the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security. The online event featured Maryland Democratic Senator Ben Cardin and Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn. Here's what Senator Cornyn had to say about the challenges facing the U.S.'s ability to help Ukraine fight Russian forces.
Well, what's been so challenging about all of this is nobody has knows how long it's going to last, least of all Vladimir Putin. He thought, I think, that he would walk into Kiev like the Taliban walked into Afghanistan without a shot fired, and that would accomplish his goals. And boy, was he surprised! He was surprised by the grit of the Ukrainian people, and he was surprised by the charismatic leadership of President Zelensky. Who I think is sort of a modern day reincarnation of Winston Churchill when it comes to rallying the people, not only of his country, but around the world to the cause of the Ukrainians. So Senator Cardin's exactly right. The president has existing authorities, but one of the problems we've had is getting this equipment, these weapons to the Ukrainians fast enough. That's the consistent message that we've heard. And now that they've begun to flow, I think the Biden administration has done a good job, although we all wish it could have been done faster, getting these weapons to the Ukrainians.
Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn speaking at the Atlantic Council. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin has accepted an invitation to attend the G20 summit that will be held on the Indonesian island of Bali in November. The country's president, Joko Widodo, said in a statement Friday. Widodo also extended an invitation earlier this week to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who tweeted he was, quote, grateful for the invitation but did not specify whether he would attend the summit. Earlier this week, Widodo spoke with Putin and Zelensky in separate phone calls, during which he conveyed to Putin the importance of ending the war in Ukraine immediately. He also told Zelensky that Indonesia is ready to provide humanitarian assistance, but not military assistance, because it's prohibited by Indonesia's constitution and foreign policy principles. President Biden plans to move forward with student loan debt forgiveness, with two sources telling The Hill that he's considering action to expunge at least $10,000 per borrower. Here's White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki responding to reporters on that proposal.
Hello, I have a few questions about student loan forgiveness. First off, has the president concluded that he has the power to do this unilaterally? And secondly, does he believe that means testing is the correct approach to student loan forgiveness?
Well, there's been no conclusion of any process internally yet, but you heard the president talk this morning about his ongoing consideration of how to provide additional relief to many Americans who are still have student loans, even though they have not paid a penny on federal student loans since he took office. What was the second part of your question?
Has he decided he wants to do means testing?
So he has talked in the past about how he doesn't believe that that millionaires and billionaires obviously should benefit, or even people from the highest income. So that's certainly something he would be looking at.
So just want to be very clear about the power to do this. He's looking at doing this issue.
Yeah.
But you're not saying if he's going to send the bill to Congress or if he's actually going to do it himself.
Well, we definitely know he has the ability and the legal ability to sign a bill Congress passes. So what we're really talking about is authorities through executive action, which we're continuing to look at and he's continuing to consider.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki from Thursday. Midterm election talking points surrounding student loans are ramping up after President Biden announced that his administration is taking a hard look at student loan debt forgiveness. USA Today White House correspondent Joey Garrison has an update on that story. What are the talking points in favor of this proposal from the Biden administration and other Democrats?
Well, I think with President Biden, and again, he's not formally rolled anything out here, but I think the way that they're going to frame this is as a way to save Americans' money during this period of inflation. I think one of the phrases you've heard the president, you heard Jen Psaki, the press secretary of the White House yesterday, call it extra breathing room. And so, you know, there's been no secret, and it's been well documented, the stress that college students or former college students have had in paying their loans. And I think they're going to tie this in, if indeed, like it appears, the president does introduce something into that larger effort of ways the president is trying to bring down costs. And you know, Biden is struggling right now with low approval ratings. And there's a real question about voter enthusiasm, particularly among some of his key constituencies, young voters. And this could be something that does drive up energy somewhat during the midterm elections.
And speaking of which, USA Today White House correspondent Joey Garrison, in your article at usatoday.com, you write that some progressives say they won't be satisfied until all student loan debt is canceled, while others are just content that President Biden is even talking about student loan debt forgiveness.
Yeah, I would say just a couple minutes after the president made his comments, NAACP put out a comment statement that says, you know, we agree that we shouldn't cancel $50,000 in student loan debt. We should cancel all of it. $50,000 was just the bottom line. And that was in response to I actually asked the question to the president whether he supports a $50,000 cancellation of student debt. And he told me he wouldn't support something that high. At the same time, though, I mean, this has been something pushed by a lot of progressives, Democrats, among those the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. They met with the president earlier this week where this became a topic. And, you know, they told us Raul Ruiz, for example, chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, says, you know, we're just, you know, happy that the president is looking at this. And knowing that the president of the United States is looking at really believing student debt should be celebrated. So I think there is just generally optimism among the left that the president is moving towards this direction. Yes, as you know, some on the left have wanted the full cancellation, but really I think it would be a win for progressives if he did anything beyond $10,000 per se.
And we've read media accounts with phrases such as rewarding the liberal college-going elite and punishing those who couldn't afford college or had to save to pay off their debt. In fact, one senator even called the proposal a political bribe. What's behind these talking points from Republicans and others who oppose President Biden's idea?
Well, and that last quote that you referenced there, the quote bribe, was a tweet from Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, Republican, who has been one of the few Republicans who sometimes is on board with Biden's proposals. He clearly opposes this one. What I think we've seen in the last week as this talk of student loan debt forgiveness has built up again is you've really seen kind of the playbook on how Republicans will fight this, what could be a popular issue among some voters in the midterms. And really, the argument is centered on this is an elitist-centric idea that helps the wealthy who went to college and is something that punishes people who didn't go to college or who had to work their way to pay on their own. And so it's a very much class kind of argument the White House is going to make. And this comes as the increasingly white non-college educated voters have been voting more Republican each election cycle for a couple decades now. And so, you know, I think this is going to be kind of the latest political wedge that Republicans are going to deploy to kind of maximize the turnout among their voters. You know, so I think that's kind of where the fight's going to go from here on this front.
And in fact, Republican senators introduced a bill Wednesday that would prevent President Biden from canceling student loan debt without congressional approval. What does that mean?
Well, and this bill doesn't have any shot of passing in the Democratic Senate. But I think what they're really doing is drawing the line in the sand and saying, hey, we oppose this student debt for debt forgiveness, firmly, like we and they're really making the contrast stark there. In terms of what the bill would actually do, it would mean essentially the president couldn't use his executive authority to cancel any debt. It would have to be something that goes through Congress, essentially. It's something backed by Republican leadership. Senate majority with John Thune called such debt forgiveness as blatant unfairness to individuals who already paid off their student loans. And so, again, as they rolled out this bill, you started seeing a lot of the talking points that they're going to pursue here. Now, I will say, the White House, as they are planning, or the president, as he is considering student debt forgiveness at some level. There's been reporting that has come out in the last day or so that there could be income requirements of recipients. In other words, perhaps former students who reach a certain income level might not be eligible for student debt forgiveness. And so I think if we do get to the point where the president does introduce a plan, I think that they are pretty aware of some of these attacks that could be out there, that this is a program that favors the wealthy and privileged. And I think they would try to address that in those ways.
And what is the proposal? What is the status of that proposal right now?
Well, what the president told me and other reporters yesterday was that he was, quote, taking a hard look at how we can use executive authority to cancel some debt, and would have an answer on that in the coming weeks. And so, you know, we'll see where that is. Right now, we're in late April heading into May. And, you know, I would expect this summer, sooner than later, is when if the president is going to do something, he needs to do it in the next, I would say, month to 6 weeks, and not let this get into August and sort of the dead time of politics here in D.C. I mean, if Democrats do want something, Democrats really need something more to run on and show Americans what they've been able to do by having Democrats in the House and the Senate and then in the White House. And, you know, this could be something that they show to voters. But if they want to do it, they need to do it sooner than later.
USA Today White House correspondent Joey Garrison. Find his reporting at usatoday.com. Thank you very much for helping us understand this issue.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are a few more headlines. COVID-19 vaccines could be authorized for the United States' youngest children as early as June. That's according to the Food and Drug Administration's latest meeting schedule. The FDA announced Friday it is reserving dates on June 8th, 21st, and 22nd for its Vaccines Advisory Committee to discuss making younger ages eligible for COVID-19 vaccination. A bomb scare set off scenes of panic at Israel's airport after an American family showed up with an unexploded artillery shell that they had found in the Golan Heights and intended to bring back as a souvenir. The airport authority said security officers sounded an alert when they discovered the unexploded shell, and at least one person was injured while trying to run for safety on a conveyor belt. The unexploded shell was safely removed a short time later, and the family was released after questioning. Fueled by COVID-19 relief measures and renewed federal investment, enrollment in the Affordable Care Health Care Program, medical expansion, and basic health plan policies has soared to an estimated 35.8 million as of early 2022. The Department of Health and Human Services reports that's up from 27.1 million in 2020. CNN's reporting that those gains could fall this summer if the nation's public health emergency is not renewed again, meaning states could resume disenrolling Medicaid beneficiaries who no longer qualified for coverage, a practice that was halted during the pandemic. We continue now on Capitol Hill. In her first public comments about new recordings featuring House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi accused the California Republican leader of hypocrisy over concerns about lawmakers' safety following the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Here's Speaker Pelosi responding to reporters.
Quick question. What do you make of the recent recordings that showed that Mr. McCarthy, Minority Leader McCarthy, knew that his members were a danger, they posed a danger, because since then he has not wanted to punish anybody from Paul Gosar or Marjorie Taylor Greene, but the recordings clearly show that he knew that these people posed a threat.
You know, we're here largely as legislators. That's what I love about this place, because we legislate to make law, listen to the people, make laws that meet their needs to improve their lives. What you're talking about, I'm not going to comment on, except to say this. It was interesting to me that the leader talked about the concern that he had, if in fact those were his words, which that's up to you to decide, that he was concerned about his members causing danger here. And at the same time, complaining that we have magnetometers to keep guns off the floor of the House. It just seemed inconsistent to me, especially now that one of his members was seen taking a gun into an airport. I thought you were arrested for that, tried to take a gun on a plane. I guess his member was treated differently.
Madam Speaker, I guess on that point, I mean, I know
you're right. I'm not going to spend this meeting talking about Kevin McCarthy's inconsistencies with his caucus. So just understand that. Do you want to talk about competition in the world, so America is number one. You want to talk about protecting democracy from dictatorship. You want to talk about lowering costs for the American people. I've said what I'm going to say. It's up to them. People have to make a judgment about how the Republicans in Congress hold their members accountable. And they can't say on one breath, I'm afraid that they're going to cause danger to other members, and at the same time complain about my having magnetometers on the floor of the House. That's all I'm going to say about it. So if you want to waste your question on that, that's up to you.
Briefing reporters earlier, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat from California. In Georgia, this quote from Republican Governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp. Our classrooms will not be pawns of those who want to indoctrinate our kids with their partisan political agendas. TheHill.com reporting that Governor Kemp on Thursday signed into law legislation curbing talk of so-called divisive concepts in the state's classrooms, such as topics that discuss the U.S. as fundamentally racist. The law also bars transgender athletes from participating on school sports teams consistent with their gender identity. Another measure creates a parent's bill of rights, allowing parents greater authority to review what their children learn in schools. We turn now to topics of COVID-19 and scientific research. The Coronavirus Crisis Subcommittee held a hearing on scientific integrity for public health agencies. Here's Maryland Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin speaking on scientific integrity during the pandemic.
We've documented 88 separate incidents of political interference in the pandemic response by Trump officials, including attempts to suppress or change scientific reports based on research, implementing public health policies without any credible scientific basis at all, and penalizing scientists for sharing accurate science with the public. The emails released today show that Trump White House officials wanted to tell the CDC that its ability to publish its scientific guidance to faith communities was, quote, contingent on CDC removing public health recommendations that the White House found, quote, offensive. Now, Dr. Rasmussen, in your 20-year career at CDC, have you ever witnessed political officials instructing CDC scientists before to change science-based public health guidance because certain administration officials found the scientific findings and guidance offensive?
No, I never saw that in my time at CDC.
Okay, so I want you to just talk about the strangeness of that and tell us how that does, in fact, collide with the work that scientists do.
Yeah, as I tried to give some background of how hard it is to make these recommendations and that you're basing your science on changing data, but CDC scientists take those recommendations very seriously. And so coming to some recommendations and then having them altered, having political interference, I can only imagine must have been really devastating.
Maryland Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin. Ohio Republican Representative Jim Jordan also spoke during that subcommittee hearing on scientific integrity during the pandemic. Here's Representative Jim Jordan questioning Anita Desikan, senior analyst at the Union of Concerned Scientists.
And when the head of the CDC, a pretty important public institution when we're talking about COVID, and you've pointed out the Trump administration supposedly did scientific integrity violations, when the head of the CDC says something that is absolutely false, and yet that's not any, the simple question, does that erode trust in public institutions?
Again, we can get back to you in writing to describe this answer in more detail.
Did it erode trust in public institution, and would it be a scientific integrity violation when the head of the CDC allowed the teachers union to edit the guidance on school reopenings, which is exactly what what Dr. Walensky did? Would that be a scientific integrity violation?
That's an investigation that I can't comment on the specific details. But we do agree that the process of investigating scientific integrity violation is important. There needs to be investigations to examine the evidence.
How about when Dr. Fauci said that this virus didn't start in a lab? Is that a concern? Does that erode trust? Because it sure looks like it did. All the evidence points there. Is that something you're going to investigate?
We can describe this more in writing.
What about when he said it wasn't gain of function research done at the lab in Wuhan, China? You going to investigate that? Because that sure, it sure looks like it was gain of function research.
Again, I can't specifically talk on this particular instance.
What about when Dr. Fauci said American tax dollars were not used at the Wuhan Institute of Virology when, in fact, we know they were? Was that a scientific integrity violation? Dr. Fauci, the smartest guy on the planet, the highest paid guy in our government, the head of the NIAID, that when he said that, was that a scientific integrity violation that you guys should be looking into?
Again, I can't speak on specifics that you're raising here.
Representative Jim Jordan questioning Anita Desikan, senior analyst at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Finally, on this day, 48 years ago, President Richard Nixon announced to the public that he would release transcripts of 46 taped White House conversations in response to a Watergate trial subpoena issued in July 1973. The House Judiciary Committee accepted 1,200 pages of transcripts the next day, but insisted that the tapes be turned over. In his announcement, he cited his right to executive privilege to protect state secrets. He stated that he and his advisors edited the transcripts to omit anything, quote, irrelevant to the Watergate investigation or critical to national security. Here's the president.
Good evening. I have asked for this time tonight in order to announce my answer to the House Judiciary Committee's subpoena for additional Watergate tapes and to tell you something about the actions I shall be taking tomorrow, about what I hope they will mean to you, and about the very difficult choices that were presented to me. These actions will at last, once and for all, show that what I knew and what I did with regard to the Watergate break-in and cover-up were just as I have described them to you from the very beginning. I spent many hours during the past few weeks thinking about what I would say to the American people if I were to reach the decision I shall announce tonight. And so my words have not been lightly chosen. I can assure you they are deeply felt. It was almost 2 years ago, in June 1972, that five men broke into the Democratic National Committee headquarters in Washington. It turned out that they were connected with my reelection committee, and the Watergate break-in became a major issue in the campaign.
That was President Richard Nixon. In July 1974, the Supreme Court rejected Nixon's claim of executive privilege and ordered him to turn over the remaining tapes. On one of those tapes, the president could be heard ordering the FBI to end its investigation of the Watergate break-in. This came to be known as the, quote, smoking gun that proved Nixon's guilt. Coming July 1st, the second season of C-SPAN's Presidential Recordings podcast will focus on the tapes released by the Nixon administration. This 8-part series will examine Watergate and other parts of President Nixon's time in office, including conversations with members of Congress, Chief Justice Warren Burger, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, and more. Presidential Recordings, Season 2, The Nixon Tapes, dropping July 1st wherever you listen to podcasts. And a reminder that this program is available as a podcast. Listen anytime at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington, delivered daily right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Thanks for listening today to Washington Today.